Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager with this week's Fireside Chat. That's the Fireside. I'm the chat, and that's Otto, who is snoring at this time, right? Let's hear.
He stopped.
He stopped? Good. I'll tell you, he's amazing. He knew we were going on air, and he stopped. This is Fireside Chat number
233.
It's my chance to just talk to you off the cuff about life, some thoughts, and take your questions. So it's about 50-50, me offering thoughts and then taking your questions. So I want to talk to you about a personal thing and make it into a bigger deal. My son, I have two sons. My second son was married last week in Florida at my first son's home. So that was particularly meaningful that my older son and his wife would do as much work as they did. They did it all the work to have this beautiful wedding. And it was very moving to me. So I analyze myself all the time. I have always looked at me from outside of me. This is not a boast. It's not necessarily even terrific. It just is what it is. So I've always done that. One of the reasons I think I understand people pretty well is that I really worked and still do on understanding me. And since I don't think that I'm composed of anything different from anybody else, I assume that if something is true about my nature, it's probably true about human nature, or at least in some cases, male nature, for everybody, or nearly everybody. And I've turned out to be right. I've always thought I am sort of every man. Just, I'm unique, as everyone is unique, but I'm also every man, capital E. It's a term, every man. And in that philosophical sense, I mean it. So I decided at a very early age, which is a gift that I don't take any credit for, that I thought about the big stuff at a very early age and made some permanent life decisions. So one of them, since I always wanted to be happy, I really hate unhappiness. I decided that on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of happiness, 1 being horribly depressed and 10 being ecstatic, I would not aim ever to be a 10. That I would aim to be a fairly permanent, consistent 7.5. And that's really what I've done. And it has worked out wonderfully for me. I love being at a 7.5 every day, basically. And I've never sought to get a 9 or a 10. I don't miss it. But I certainly don't want to be a 3 or a 4. And anyone I know who has gotten to 10s also gets 3s and 4s. So it's the sort of, I'm prepared to give up the honey so as not to have the bee. It's a very famous Hebrew saying that, you know, about, well, if you don't want to get stung, you have to give up the honey. By the way, there are times I'm completely willing to get the sting for the honey. But in terms of happiness, I opted out. And it's worked out terrific for me. Anyone who lives with me, well, only one person lives with me, my wife. My kids lived with me. And my friends are with me a lot. My coworkers are with me. They can all vouch that I'm never in a grouchy mood. I'm certainly never at a 3 or a 5, almost never at a 6. Why am I telling you this? Because at my son's wedding last week, I was as close to a 10 as I ever was in my life. It was that wonderful an experience and affected me that emotionally. And I found that fascinating. Wow. That's what a 10 feels like? It's intense, I gotta tell you. And I'm very happy I had it, and I'm very happy I'm back to 7.5 or even 7.9. So I didn't stop at that. Then, after monitoring me, I decided to think about this whole subject. Well, if I was a 10 or 9.5, maybe, no, I don't know what a 10 would be, but let's say I was at a 10. If I was at a 10 at my son's wedding, what does that say about the effect of your child's wedding on your happiness? That was a very dramatic question for me. Let's review, with regard to children, the milestones in a person's life. One, the birth of your child. Two, the marriage of your child. Three, your child having a child, so you becoming a grandparent. In people's lives, there were other milestones with their children in Jewish life, and I am a Jew, and I'm a practicing Jew. In a Jew's life, there is also on the eighth day of a boy's life, just 8 days old, there is the ritual circumcision, which dates back 3,500 years. And that I must say, when that took place with my two boys, I was really moved. That I'm doing something that's been done for over 3,000 years. I got to tell you, that really did hit me. And then there is the bar mitzvah or bat mitzvah. Bar mitzvah for boy, bat mitzvah girl. Girl when she's 12, boy when she's 13, when he's 13. Having said all that, as meaningful as all those things are, this was the epitome of happiness. The wedding of my child. And I think most people would say that. I don't think all. Some might say the birth of their child, or at least their first child. By the fifth child, it gets sort of deja vu. I only have two children, but I got to assume that that happens. But the wedding of your child, for I think more than 50% of parents, is the high. So I analyzed that. Now, why is that? And I was thinking, oh, there are many reasons. By the way, one big one for me is that I believe that not only did I experience major joy, but major pride. I was proud of my two boys when they got married, because it said to me they want to be men, not boys. I don't think most people fully grow up if they're not married. There are exceptions to every rule in the world. There are some single people, never married, who have matured and blossomed. But by and large, there's n n nothing is like marriage to mature you. Nothing. And that my boys opted to that extent to be what I call men, was a great source of pride to me, in addition to joy. But I analyzed it further. I think most people would acknowledge this is true. Tell me, other than a funeral, which doesn't count because you're dead, when in life do so many relatives and friends come to any event in your life, like the marriage of your child? There is none, none. Well, obviously nobody's there, maybe two or three people at most. I don't mean in the delivery room, but even at the hospital, or even, how many people come to a birth? Okay, basically nobody except the intimate partners. Then, so that doesn't count. Again, in Jewish life, you do have a turnout for the circumcision. You have a bigger turnout for the bar mitzvah, but no, nothing like the turnout for a wedding. And he's definitely onto something today. Yes, you good boy. So it's interesting. Do you know, if I'm right, there is no day in a person's life that more friends and relatives will gather than your wedding or the wedding of your child. That's a big deal. The thing that the most people will come to, and in this case, very few lived in Florida. People came from the Northeast, people came from the West Coast, and they wouldn't have come for any other occasion. But they came for a wedding. I think that's pretty suggestive of the significance people hold marriage to be. Isn't that right? They vote with their feet. I don't care what people say, they vote with their feet. So I'm not done since I think things through. So I'm saying all of this for the punchline. So here is a question every parent should ask him or herself. What will bring me more joy? My child graduating from a prestigious college or getting into a prestigious college, or my child getting married? Let's take the most prestigious college, Harvard. So if I said to a parent, hey, listen, what do you think will give you more joy? Your kid getting into Harvard or your kid getting married? Okay. And I'm talking about parents who are really keen on their kid getting into a great college. Okay. Look, people cheated to get their kids into USC, right? I mean, which sort of ruined their lives because they got caught. So it's obviously unbelievably important to parents, to many parents, not to me, by the way. I didn't give a hoot what college my kids went to. For that matter, I didn't even give a hoot if they went to college. And the parent who feels that, how important it is. So I want to ask you a question. Many of you watching this are young people. And you should hear this, and you should ask your parents this. And many of you are parents. So what do you think will give you more joy? And by the way, in my case, not just joy, but pride in your child, daughter or son, for opting to get married. That's an achievement in our time, that they have taken on this incredible responsibility of being committed to another person. So which one do you think will bring you more joy? Uh-oh. He knows that we started a little late. He may leave. I'm warning everybody now. It has happened that he has left in the middle of the fireside chat. But Otto, you know you're doing very well, and we're appreciative. America's most famous dog and hasn't gone to his head. So that's a really important question. Now, let's say you say, and I think a lot of people would, oh, they're equally important to me. My child get into a good college and my child get married. Okay, that's fine. So here's the punchline of the punchline. Have you communicated that? Did you communicate that? Are you communicating that to your child? And the answer is overwhelmingly no. Very few parents push marriage as much as they push getting into a good college. And there you have it. People don't really do what even they value. I suspect that most parents want their children to marry. Although I think that the woke parent, the progressive parents, oh, no, that's my kid's decision. I don't have any say in that matter. Well, you don't. It's true. You can't determine it. Well, it's not true. You can determine it. I take that back. What you push is basically what your kid will value. If you're crazed about their getting into a good college, they'll be crazed about getting into a good college. You're crazed about their getting married, they'll be crazed about getting married. Okay? Just letting you know, that's the whole purpose of this, other than to share my own joy at my child's wedding, my son's wedding. But it really is to confront you with this incredibly important question. What are you communicating to your son or daughter, or both? Good college uber alles, above everything? Well then, don't be surprised if they don't get married, which increasingly young people are not doing. The smallest percentage of Americans are marrying than any time in American history. But they sure as hell want to get into a good college. For me, there's no comparison. None. Harvard, Schmarvard. But marriage? Ah, that's important. Okay. Let's go to our video question.
Hi, Dennis. My name is Jared. I'm 31 and I live in Los Angeles. And I just wanted to hear your commentary about an observation I have noticed, which is that why do conspiracy theories often align with either conservative principles or what end up being conservative talking points in the news, whether it's the origin of a pandemic or the destruction of the nuclear family unit? It often seems like what ends up being true weeks or months later only seems to align with people who hold conservative values, and it seems not to afflict the left. Thoughts, comments? I'm very curious. Thank you.
All right, so let me see if I can do this correctly. I did. Okay. So, first of all, it's important to note that one way in which the left dismisses conservatives is to say whatever we say is a conspiracy theory. I don't think I've ever used the words conspiracy theory with regard to anything that I think is happening. And I'm a pretty prominent conservative, been on radio 40 years, a lot of books, and so on. I don't use the term. The vast majority of conservative thinkers I know don't use the term. But we are accused of believing in conspiracy theories. So, for example, did he mention the nuclear family?
Yeah, he did.
Does that mean he's stretching or yawning or getting out?
Adjusting.
That's great. That was, by the way, the voice of the Megan. So take the nuclear family. And again, I want to point out, when I say the left, I don't mean liberals. I distinguish between liberals and left. Liberals tragically vote for the left, but liberals don't have left-wing values. Liberals have liberal values. I have an entire video at PragerU and a whole article on the difference between liberals and leftists. I'll just give you one example now. I don't want to get into that subject because it's just take too long. Liberals believe in racial integration and leftists believe in racial segregation. Okay. Leftists believe in black graduations at college. Leftists believe in black dormitories. Liberals don't. Okay. So I'm talking about the left. The left has no interest in the nuclear family. Nuclear family is mom, dad, and kids. Married man and woman with children. That's the nuclear family. I hold that to be the ideal. By the way, I have gay friends, I mean very close friends actually, who agree that the ideal is man, woman, mother, father, and children. It's not anti-gay to say that. To hold an ideal, it's like saying it's an ideal that child has two parents. Is that an insult to single parents? Of course not. There's some terrific single parents. We have abandoned the ability to provide ideals. This is a catastrophe that you can't even say what the ideal is. The ideal is a married mother and father. The ideal is that your marriage lasts for your life. I divorced. I didn't live that ideal. So I fully acknowledge. So there's no problem in me saying here's an ideal, and some people can't live by that ideal, right? It didn't work out that way. But you can't deny the ideal. The ideal isn't divorce. The ideal is a long-term marriage. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I'm not going to deny the ideal because I couldn't live it. The same holds true for mother, father, and children, and married mother, father. Not mother and father who are boyfriend and girlfriend, but who are husband and wife. That is the ideal. That is the Western ideal. The Western world is based on that. That is the Judeo-Christian ideal. There's nothing wrong in holding an ideal. And the left does not hold that ideal. So is it a conspiracy? It's not a conspiracy. It's simply that the left doesn't hold that ideal. They haven't had meetings. The anti-nuclear family club is meeting at 7 o'clock in Washington, D.C. Okay? Nobody believes that. You don't need it. You just have to subscribe to progressivism and you no longer hold the nuclear family as ideal. It's not a conspiracy. It's a fact. Another example is when we accuse them, that is the progressives, the leftists, the woke, of teaching kids in American schools critical race theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. They didn't get together at the CRT club in Detroit. Or name your city and conspire. But the fact is that that's what they teach. They teach the kids, even if it's not critical race theory, and I think that the right should stop using the term, should just say they teach kids America is systemically racist, and it's a lie. They lie about America. That's much more effective than saying the left teaches CRT. They should say that they lie about America. That's the issue. The issue is not critical race theory. The issue is lying about America. It is not a systemically racist country. And a third example is college, which is related. The colleges are awful. Virtually every college is awful and teaches your kids lies about America, teaches your kids that there's no such thing as male and female, which is one of the biggest lies of all. These are lies, and I hate using the term. It's like the L word to me. There's really no male and female. I mean, there's male and female in cats and in dogs and in zebras and in antelopes and in lions, but not in humans? Okay, it's so absurd as to not need much talk right now. None of these are conspiracies. But the left says about the right that we believe in conspiracies so as to demean what we believe. Okay, what's our timing?
23.
Yeah, took a lot of time to get to the first written question. The first written question is so long, it may end the entire chat. Try to keep them as brief as you can. It's hard to say a lot in a little time. That's one of the great things about our five-minute videos, how much we pack into 5 minutes. If you knew how long we work on 5 minutes, we work dozens of hours on 5 minutes. Jesse, 47 years old, Rockland, California. Hello, Dennis Otto, Snoopy, and crew. Just listened to Fireside Chat number 226, and I loved hearing the story about when you were in eighth grade and frequently got sent to the principal's office for disruptive classroom behavior as a result of being bored. I can relate, as my seventh grade son frequently gets in trouble at school for the exact same reason! He is very bright and more astute than some adults. He often tells me he doesn't see how most of what he learns in school will help him in the future. By the way, I thought that a lot too. And I still do. I'm not sure how algebra has fully helped me. I hate saying that because there must be some value to it. But it doesn't matter. It sharpens your mind, as does almost any subject. But anyway, I'll go on. Okay. And he believes the school system is, quote, rigged, unquote. I have to admit he's right. I tell him that there's always something worthwhile to learn at school, such as interacting with difficult people, etc. My husband, who is a high school teacher, tells him that, yes, it is rigged, and to just play the game. What else can we tell him to make his remaining years at school more enjoyable for him? P.S. I know you are an advocate of homeschooling, but it is not an option for us. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. What can you tell him to make his remaining years at school more enjoyable? I have no idea. He's going to have to figure that out. He can look, basically, he has this choice to spend the next 5 years lamenting his fate or figuring out how to make the best of it. And that's what I would tell him. Are you going to spend the next 5 years lamenting your fate? I didn't. I was bored, but I didn't lament my fate. What I did was I had as good a time at school as possible. I met terrific kids that I enjoyed being with. I read what I enjoyed reading, and I didn't care about my grades as long as I obviously graduated, which I did. And I enjoyed extracurricular activities. I mean, he's going to have to figure this out. You can't tell him anything. You can tell him this. Stop complaining. I didn't complain, I will admit. I got thrown out of class in eighth grade a lot. I didn't get thrown out of class in high school. I'll tell you what I did in high school, though. I've never mentioned this. In classes that bored me, I would read the newspaper under the desk. One teacher knew that. And when I walked into class, he says, Mr. Prager, did you forget your copy of the New York Times today? I'll never forget that. I thought I had outsmarted the guy, and the whole time he knew what I was doing. I grew up in New York, and we got the daily paper for like 5 cents, and I always wanted to know what was happening in the world. Unfortunately, the New York Times is so deteriorated since then, it is not be what I would read under the desk today, but doesn't matter. That's what I did. I read a lot under the desk, and I actually had a great time in high school. I had so much fun. And I think I laughed for 4 years. That's my biggest memory. So he has to work on that. He can't lament. He's got to work it through. And that's what you should tell him. By the way, I don't understand what you mean by rigged. So a word to the wise. When you write anything, certainly a question to me, explain what you mean. And don't assume I or anyone else knows it. I don't know what you mean by school is rigged. You might mean that school is rigged politically. It certainly is. That's correct. If that's what you mean, okay, that's not the same as the boredom problem. That's much worse than the boredom problem. It's that they're taught untruths. Okay. Isla, I-S-L-A, 13 years old, Thornton, Colorado. My friend is very confused with identity. How do I explain to them how much God truly loves them without hurting his feelings about gender, ethnicity, sexuality, or race? So I don't fully understand the question. If you're telling your friend that God loves you, why would that in any way hurt their feelings? So that's not clear fully the question. And I know you know what you meant, but I'm not fully sure. So even putting aside the God loves you issue, how do you not hurt your friend who was confused with identity's feelings about gender, ethnicity, sexuality, or race, if that's what your friend is conflicted about? Well, it depends. It depends what you feel you would be saying that would hurt their feelings. I mean, what are you, 13? Let's say your friend is 13 then, which is probably true. Say it's and you're a female, and your female friend, because this happens more to females now in high schools or middle school, and says, I'm really a boy. I don't think that it should necessarily hurt the feelings of your friend to say, and maybe that's what you meant by God loves you. God made you a girl, and it's worth celebrating what you were made. Though you feel that you're a boy, it may well be societal pressure. It may well be that you're confused because you're confused about other things and think it's because you're confused about your sex slash gender. That's what I would say. And I know you're not even allowed to say that according to progressives. If a 13-year-old girl says she's a boy, you're supposed to say, all right, you're a boy. I don't think that's doing a favor to most. We have to talk in generalities to most 13-year-olds who say that. If a 25-year-old says it, I think it's quite different. But a 13-year-old, it's not reported because the press is deceitful. How many people regret the changes that they did with hormones or even surgery when they were a teenager, when they were really confused about a lot of things and then came back to realizing, wow, I really am a girl or I really am a boy. Okay. That's it. I would like more, but it's always better to have them wanting more than tuning out. So we'll have more questions next time. But I want to remind you, parents, about my question. What'll bring you more joy and pride, your child's wedding or your child getting into a great college or prestigious college? None of the colleges are great, or very few. And if you say both, act it. Push marriage as much as you push getting into a good college. Or even more. I'm Dennis Prager. See you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.